From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's guest is a plant ecologist whose work, she says, is driven by this question. All of the wild diversity of life on Earth is here with us right now. How can we take it with us into the future? It's a compelling question and one that can motivate not just scientists like Leah Johnson, Director of Conservation at Native Plant Trust in New England, but also native plant gardeners like us. She's here to talk about where conservation and gardening intersect and some of the challenges and the possibilities we face together. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Leah Johnson joined Native Plant Trust, the nation's oldest native plant conservation organization, in 2025 as its director of conservation. At the Massachusetts-based nonprofit, she manages various conservation and restoration initiatives, including the monitoring of rare and endangered species, a rare plant seed bank with over 10 million seeds, and the trust's 7 native plant sanctuaries in New England. She also oversees the leading botanical resource, Go Botany, which is one of my favorite references on the web, by the way. And I'm glad to welcome her to the program today. Hello, Leah. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
So it must have been an exciting first year at Native Plant Trust, yes?
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about immersion.
The things you just listed are diverse.
Yes, an immersive landscape, as we say in naturalistic gardening, right? It's an immersive, your portfolio is immersive.
Absolutely. And it's all of that work is work that's done in community. And I have found the community of people around this work to be just amazing and welcoming. So it's been a very social process as well as time with plants.
Yes. And like what I said about Go Botany, it's really true. I've used it forever. And I just, you know, because I'm in sort of the region of New England plants, I'm just below New England, technically in New York State, but near the Berkshires of Massachusetts. And I just love it. You know, I've always, it's been my go-to thing. So that's great to see it continuing to be there for gardeners like myself and others. So,
yeah, I think I first started using the website myself when I was working in New York State. And it's such a pleasure to work with Arthur Haynes, and who's the taxonomic powerhouse who keeps it up to date.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just love, like, you know, right there, you get your maps, you get your, you know, you get all the basics that you need. So I get really this overview of each species that, you know, gets me started on what I want to look, you know, deeper into and so forth. And so anyway, so I love your sort of mission question that I mentioned in the introduction. You know, how can we take the wild diversity that's here with us now into the future? And, you know, I know even on my tiny scale as a gardener, I think about the future too. And I think about it more all the time as the natural world seems increasingly under pressure. So, you know, just to sort of get us started, you know, with that as your mindset, I mean, what are some of the things that are like always kind of on your mind? I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot right now.
It's a big question. And I think the nice thing about a question that big is that there are a lot of answers and there are a lot of strategies and opportunities to make a difference in that direction, you know, from the very small scale to the very large scale, from, you know, thinking at a regional scale, like I get to do a lot right now, to thinking on the scale of, you know, a single garden. So I like that it's a good question for zooming in and out and for thinking creatively with a lot of people about how can we combine and, make complementary these different approaches?
Because, I mean, I suspect that, even just at the most basic level, when we're talking about conservation versus horticulture, and I don't mean versus as in opposed, as just compared to, I suspect even in the language, the word native plant has a very different definition when I'm out shopping, either browsing the online catalogs or shopping in a nursery for a native plant, or you are doing your conservation work, you're, protecting rare and endangered plants, this the seed bank, all of this. What's native isn't even a universal term because, well, what's native at the garden center, a lot of it is cultivars of native plants that have been cloned, have been created, asexually propagated, they're not from seed, et cetera, et cetera, et
Right.
cetera. It's a whole different world. It's a commercial
Yeah, and
product. It's not,
I would love to see over time there being less of a divide there. I think it's something that Uli Lorimer at Native Plant Trust and I talk about together. Is this effort there's a really exciting and energetic effort happening across the Northeast right now to improve the availability of really local source identified plant material for both ecological restoration and horticulture. The work of the Native Seed Network is really exciting, and I think, I would love for it to be the case that, you could go to a fairly normal, garden center and be able to know where the seed came from. And it's such a big challenge to develop that whole pipeline of how does the seed get from the wild into propagation? What are the genetic considerations? What are the, how local is local? And what are the effects of doing the increase? Are we selecting, for things that grow well in a farm field? But at the same time, we have to deal with those questions because we need a lot of plants to do ecological restoration and to add back ecological value to our home and, residential and commercial landscapes, as well as the more wild places. And I think the answer to what material you need may really vary. And this is another sort of interesting topic of conversation among people who are thinking about this stuff. Are the needs of ecological restoration or for, conservation of a rare species, like the considerations are different in terms of how you might move propagules around.
I was not long ago talking to someone at Mount Cuba Center in Delaware, and they were talking about how, with like the cultivars that I was just mentioning versus the straight species and especially the local ecotype, the actual genetics of a local version of that plant, that the way they kind of draw the line is at the moment is, like near the state house and so forth, they may use the cultivars in a more horticultural setting. But when they're doing the big scale restoration in their wild areas and so forth, they are seeking out, and in many cases propagating the straight species, the local version, because that's very important. Those genetics are very, very important and well matched to the other organisms, the other life of that area, yeah.
Right, and I love Mount Cuba Center. They do some really interesting work, and it's a beautiful place. Yeah, and then there are questions related to that about, if there's a species that, in New England we are right at the edge of the range of a number of species, like anywhere. There are species where you're in the middle of their range, and or where you're at the northern, southern, eastern, western edge of their range. And so there are species that are very rare at the edge of their range, but more common in the middle. And it makes a lot of frustration for natural heritage botanists when people are, taking material from the middle of the range and moving it to the edge of the range, and then they're like, was this a natural population, or are these the local genetics? It can be very confusing and complicate their work quite a bit.
So you mentioned just a couple minutes ago the Native Seed Network, and I just wanted to like just a real quick sentence or two of what is the Native Seed Network, because that's part of the hopeful solution for the future. Yes, is it a collaborative project that you're doing?
Yeah, it's a big network of people that Native Plant Trust has been involved in since the outset. That is, it involves farmers and botanical gardens and arboretum and seed banks and just a lot of it, people who are excited about native plants in a lot of different ways, thinking together about how to increase the availability and the quantity of native seed for ecological restoration and horticulture.
Right, because demand is rising both in horticulture and for conservation slash restoration
Yes.
efforts, and supply is not as probably as great as the demand, especially in certain areas. I mean, up till now, when I say now, recently, when I first came to my place like 40 years ago, this piece of land, I noticed because I had already met some native plant people and been to the Midwest and met some prairie people and so forth, been to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I noticed there was little blue stem on my hillside, and it was like, here I was in New York State, like in the area it was. And I didn't understand that. And then I read that there were like even prairies on, I think, Long Island back in, early
Yes.
history, thousands of years ago. And I'm like, what? The Ice Age will do a lot of interesting things, I guess. And so, but what's native and where is it native, as you were talking about before? And then, yet, when I wanted to get more little blue stem, the only sources were and have been until recently really in Midwestern nurseries. So, do you know what I mean? It's been, it which is great that it was available, but I didn't know anything. I didn't understand. I'm only now in recent years understanding, the complexity of all of this, to make them
Like
available.
most things in ecology are very complex.
Indeed, I don't know how you store it all in your head, Leah. I'm having trouble even with just the horticulture part of implementations of
I'm a plant ecologist by training, and
Yes.
ecology is the study of relationships. That's really what it is, relationships between organisms and each other and reorganisms in the environment. So I find this kind of stuff fascinating. You have to
Yeah.
be very as the science, the high school science standards like to encourage comfortable with uncertainty.
Which is, of course, the name of I think, a book by the Buddhist nun Pema Chodron.
Well, I like her work too.
Yeah, I like her work too. Right, exactly. So I know, Native Plant Trust is involved in, as we've been kind of talking about it, research about propagating native species and how to store the seed and, all these things that have to do with having enough and so forth. But, when I look at like classic propagation manuals or textbooks that I have on my bookshelf, admittedly some are decades old, they don't include these plants. They have hostas and stuff and astilbes, and do you know what I mean? It's not like these are the plants that are in your basic gardener's propagation how-to manual, like sedges. It doesn't say how to propagate carex or pycnanthemum or the mountain mints or whatever.
Right.
So is that something else you're like working to sort of unravel, is like how do these plants, are these plants best? I mean, not just where do we get enough seed or whatever, but also the secrets, because each plant has its own secrets really when it comes to propagation, yes.
Yeah, and I would say that, there are people learning things, certainly, across, groups of people like the Northeast Seed Network, but yeah, I think we're certainly taking notes on everything we learn.
And sharing them,
I think more sharing of that is something I definitely want to do. But yeah, there's so much to learn. There are some manuals for native plants,
Oh, I'm sure. I just, but
but
they're not
they
for horticulture. I mean, is
right,
there,
they don't cover everything for sure. And there are so many species, and one of the things that's really tricky is especially with rare plants, nobody's propagating these things. So We partner a lot with, in the conservation department is very integrated with the horticulture department at Native Plant Trust when we're working on, propagating rare species out of our seed bank. We have some seeds from like 1992, and we want to send them back out to help augment a population that has declined that they came from in the beginning. And so, I'm very grateful to Alexis Doshas at Nosamihi Farm for figuring lots of things out. There's a lot of horticultural expertise in that in our hort department, which I am very grateful for.
Right, because does it require stratification, scarification? What is its right? Like, what's the, and those are just two simple things that I know about as a gardener. That some plants need a pre-treatment of some kind, so to speak, that simulates what nature would have provided where they came from in their natural habitat. To make them germinate and thrive. And it's a lot of mysteries. A lot of mysteries. You said rare plants, and of course that's part of the mission. What are some of the plants that you are the most focused on at the moment? Are there some sort of top of the list ones that
Well, things that have gone out and gone in the ground this season. Sundial lupin. Project with the state of Vermont, working with the state botanist Grace Glynn on augmenting a population that had become very small, and also planting out into a similar habitat some seeds from a long time ago. There was a really interesting genetic study that that was done in part in relationship to that, looking at how the genetics of that population had become less diverse, and then we added some diversity that was previously there when the population was bigger back in. We have been working for a long time with a plant called Jessup's milk vetch. Bill Brumback started the, well, worked on this for a very long time with Bob Popp from the state of Vermont, and in collaboration with the Natural Heritage Program of New Hampshire as well. This is a little plant that only exists in three natural populations and in three introduced populations in very similar habitat, very nearby. And it clings to rocks and it gets washed away, and it's and so the seeds that we have in the seed bank, we every year there's a meeting to discuss, do we augment it again this year? Do we wait and see which populations need more attention? So we had some very robust plants that Alexis grew last year that were so fluffy and healthy that they actually flowered in their first year after we planted them, which doesn't always happen. So that was a nice thing to see this.
Interesting. So, talking also again back to sort of the overlaps, difference, similarities, and differences in horticulture and conservation. So Doug Tallamy, for one, University of Delaware professor, for one, writes in his books, about creating wildlife corridors and so on, and how our native plant gardens, though obviously very small compared to wild spaces, and often cited in highly developed, urban and suburban settings, they nevertheless sort of connect disparate patches of sort of nature, and therefore are really important to the bigger picture. So even little bits pieced together to make these sort of pathways for wildlife and so forth. So do our gardens, to your mind, as an ecologist, I mean, or do our gardens play a role? Are they part of the sort of restoration picture? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I have spent a lot of time in the space of urban ecology. I think it's really important. I kind of think of it as a continuum from like on one end you have like preservation of relatively intact places, where things where you have the whole interacting system has its parts, and all of these relationships are intact. among the many different elements of an ecosystem. And then, you've got, places where the ecological restoration is needed for a variety of reasons. There are all kinds of different things that change. And then, on the most peopled end of that spectrum, there's so much possibility in the places where we live, where we work. And it's all part of the same process and the same trajectory of improving the health of the ecosystems around us. And I think it's so important to do that where we see it every day. There's been a bunch of research that says that nature experience, especially early in your life, is really important to your connection to nature. And that takes an urban form for most people. 80% of Americans live in cities and towns, right? So
Right.
we're living, we're voting, we're thinking, we're making decisions about what we do with land. And so I'm totally in favor of increasing biodiversity everywhere, especially, connecting to the native biodiversity, the native species of the place where you live. I think it really deepens a sense of place. I am such a fan also of learning to know the things that are all around you. It really enriches experience so much. And that's learning to see the mullein that is growing in a crack in the driveway and appreciating it for its enthusiasm. I think in an ecological sense, these if you're depending on what your particular place is surrounded by, that'll make a difference to what can use it, that you didn't put there. But there is connectivity across all kinds of a landscape matrix, right? So some organisms can move more easily across an urban environment than others. So, a blue jay, can actually transfer acorns quite a distance in a city, whereas, so an oak tree might travel okay if there are blue jays. But
Right.
something like bloodroot, you might have that in a forest, in a remnant forest patch in a city, but it isn't going to travel as well because it travels by ants,
I was going to say, those hungry ants like to eat the elaiosomes and get all that yummy lipid or whatever it is, that sort of fatty stuff off the elaiosomes or
And in
something.
the process, take the seed to their garbage pile and plant it, Great.
Like in the
But they
compost.
Exactly, but they're not going to take it, a mile away or, even, a few blocks. So, but residential land does really cover a lot of land, and so, I think we can look at that as ecological potential.
So in last couple, like 2 minutes or so, I just any other sort of plants or projects or anything that you want to shout out for people or any other sort of things that you want us to be aware of as gardeners, that are on your mind that you feel like can be on our mind too and help with that sort of answering that question that you pose as your mission statement, sort of.
Well, I think what unites all the things we do with plants, plant conservation, ecology, and horticulture, agriculture, depending on how you're doing it, right? Is this we're caring for nature, we're caring for the land in a way that's focused on plants. And so I find a lot of common ground among the people who do that in a variety of different ways. And I think that, bringing native plants into our everyday lives can be really just wondrous and beautiful. And I particularly enjoy the element of surprise and change and, seeing what else comes when you, as well as enjoying the plants that you invite yourself.
And I'm always thrilled. I'm glad you said sort of the wondrous thing, because I always thought, just us gardeners who sort of have the awe thing because we don't understand enough and it feels so big to us. But when I hear research scientists and so forth, ecologists and entomologists speak about the awe factor, I know we're all one. We're all connected, like all plant people, we all kind of have that same underlying feeling, which is so great. So I'm so glad to talk to you, and I hope we're going to talk again soon. And I'm again so appreciative for the work that you do, which obviously, as someone in the general vicinity, I've utilized so much over the years. So thank you, Leah Johnson from Native Plant Trust. Thanks for making time today.
Thank you for your work, which I also very much enjoy.
Oh, good.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, talk to you again soon. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and RobinHoodRadio.com.